And welcome everybody on YouTube as we start off the hook overtime for this August the 30th. Kyle, do you make it okay?
Yes.
Okay, looks okay. Rob, Gila?
Hi.
Present.
And can you confirm that we are actually, in fact, on YouTube?
We are actually, in fact, on YouTube.
Amazing. Yes. And Alex, I'm surprised to see you. I thought since you were in Croatia, you'd be signing off early.
Well, I was going to peel off a little bit early, but, you know, I'm awake for a little bit. I think the conversation has energized me. So I'll hang out for like 15, 20 minutes or so and at least say hello to Rebel.
Okay, thanks for encouraging that. That's just great. Do you guys want to continue talking about drones, or are we finished with that?
I'm fine. I just was looking up. I mean, there are rules about fraudulent activity in your applications and all this stuff. They're just throwing so much at people, and I'm concerned. I'm concerned because I think there's a lot of people out there that if it's a new type of aircraft, they're going to just sort of comply with it immediately, and they may not realize exactly what it's all about and what, you know, what it means. And people that are trying to comply may have to have extra expense. And of course, since it's older, they're not going to have any support, you know, no support, because product life cycles are instantaneous, and who cares? So good luck and that kind of stuff, as well as the people that, okay, yeah, I did say people might not comply, but okay, what about the people that really, really don't comply? Like, don't want to, mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, like, intentionally do not comply. I'm not saying they're, like, everyday citizens. I'm saying that's part of the pool of aircraft you can't really track with,
yeah,
your new system.
How do you track a drone that doesn't want to be tracked?
Right. I mean, I think it's incentivizing some of that, and that, like, when we talk about other kinds of dangers, we say, like, you know, if you try to institute this, people that are determined are still going to slip through, that kind of thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of angles to it. And, of course, we don't know that much about, like, all of the technology. And, you know, there's some language in, I haven't read all of it in honesty, but there's some language about retention of data. You know, you already have to have an FAA account, so you have to kind of already be in their system and set up to do any of this, unless you get a very, very small, I believe the size is 0.55 pounds, so you have to be under half a pound. And most small drones, I think very, very small ones, like indoor and like toy drones, and even some racing drones are a little bit under that. But the kinds that people are using for photography or older ones, mm-hmm. might be much larger, or maybe you broke down and got some different batteries and you modified it. Maybe you've added some stuff of your own. But there are some other aspects of this, and I didn't really have enough time to talk about it, that are interesting in what they're changing, what they're allowing. I don't want to just say, like, oh, there's no support, and as though I'm totally upset. I'm more curious about what this all means and how we're going to respond to it, how people are going to use it, what the behaviors will actually be. But there's things like more permissive stuff around where and how you can fly. And, of course, the other interesting thing was nighttime flying and certain things like adding strobes and other safety features to your drone, which maybe, you know, people will get creative with. I've been playing around with some of that with this old thing I'm trying to make fly again. So, but anyway, that it's a whole world, I realized. It's like you turn around and something that you thought was just kind of fledgling, it's just quite evolved, and just understanding all of it and how it all works is takes a lot. So I'm really curious what kind of drone experts out there might have to say, and drone hackers.
And in other countries as well, because what you're describing is only in the United States.
Well, correct. Yeah. That's the establishment of the system here. And, of course, yeah, what would you do if you were going overseas? You would obviously maybe want to turn that off. instead of broadcasting information like that. if you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
But this may turn out to be like an example or a template for other nations where you have to do this everywhere.
Go ahead, Rob.
As someone who's terribly curious but isn't into the drone hobby at all, I'm wondering about the enforcement for this sort of thing. Like, are we at now or are we going to get to a spot where the authorities, like, if they don't think your drone is identifying itself well enough, can, like, shoot it out of the air or take out a big butterfly net and catch it, or I don't know how it works?
Well, I think that's less likely, but I think there is logging of it. If they don't, like, if you are using this transmission technology, then yeah, you're going to be willfully sort of giving them a whole lot of telemetry data about how your drone behaves. And without it, of course, I mean, I think that it's, and under those strictures, what I'm saying is that it's the kind of thing where your license, your ability to fly legally in their system could be revoked. I was also looking up if there are fines and stuff associated with it, but I'm not totally sure on that. But it seems like it's also a hedge for like forensic stuff. If they can prove that a certain type of drone or a certain serial number, even, it just makes it that much easier to verify implicating someone who might have been in the area of a crime or something that was interfering with public safety or whatever their reasons become.
Interesting. Our phone number, 802-321-4225, anybody wants to join the conversation, has any comments on things we've talked about tonight or anything completely new and different? And I should open that up to you folks here. If there's anything that you want to bring up that we haven't mentioned in the past hour and change.
Just want to say hello to the 29, well, 28, because one of them is me, people who are who are watching us live on YouTube right now.
You're not seeing much because we don't turn the video cameras on.
The 28 people who have joined us live on YouTube and are looking at this, I still don't know what that first word is. Is it bikes?
I'm sorry, what are you asking?
In the first word in the picture that's scratched out.
Oh.
Is it bikes?
Something will be removed.
It's scratched out. I don't know what it is.
We've never revealed that.
Yeah.
To this day, that has remained a secret.
I mean, is it bikes? Is it locks? Is it...
I think we've been told at some point. I think it's safe to assume bikes is probably what it is about. But we're not for sure off the top of our heads if we discussed it at all before. I don't know exactly where that photo was taken. But I'm sure people around in that part of the world might recognize it and say, yes, exactly.
It's probably mentioned on a previous show. I'm sure we can look it up.
Yep.
I'm sure we can look it up. Also, I did want to mention that we did have a quick chime-in on the chat about the drone stuff. Tim in Connecticut says, I haven't flown my FAA registered drone in so long in a hobby mode in photography. I would not buy and retrofit my drone to be legal I'd still have the same overflight restrictions. Also, yes, people are now chiming in the chat. We have someone says locks may be removed. Someone says bills. Someone says signs. This is a fun game.
You're talking about the picture. If you go to our, if you're listening to us now, actually, if you're on YouTube now, you see a picture. It's a sign of some sort. It says something will be removed, and the first word is scratched out, and people are now chiming in with what the word could be.
Yes. And Fun Talks does say Emmanuel. I don't know if he's trying to get your attention or I don't think the space there is long enough to say Emmanuel, and it definitely ends with an S.
Yeah, I doubt very much it says that.
I think it's open to interpretation. I think that's the artistic intent behind the image.
Yes. We're up to 35 people now, including me, so 34. Folks in the chat, keep it coming. And hopefully will get a call.
So if I had a whole bunch of drones, what if I had all the same broadcast and you just were a big swarm of like a whole bunch of the same thing and you were like just messing up a whole thing and then one of them wasn't like that? I mean, what kinds of things is this going to drive people to do? I really want to know. Because it's, I mean, would a system like that be flooded? Wow. It's going to be weird. It's going to be weird. It just limits a whole lot of, like, the sort of gray area of what that all was for so long, as far as drones just being kind of an emerging sort of free-for-all thing.
Go ahead, Rob.
I mean, I'm thinking about all the apps that you can get for computers and mobile devices that do things like randomize your MAC address whenever you hook to a network somewhere and things of that sort. And if you could get like a small board together to just randomize the ID number that it sends out, or, you know, at least have it settable by the user, that would probably be something looked down upon by the authorities, but probably technically trivial.
Right, right. I mean, like, let's speak to that. I mean, why they're implementing this is to sort of streamline the airspace and make it functional but safe area for these kinds of vehicles to be used more, I guess, in industry, for hobbyists having some abilities, and then also you name the purpose, whether it's realtors or other sorts of service and or inspection, whatever it is, there's just going to be think of that layered with like delivery. And I think that's where a lot of the concern is, but also of course in overall security, I think there's just this yearning to know what's flying real low and at other altitudes and those sort of in between spaces as well, and a bit of a panic even given how it's being used in war. So those are all things to confront, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting because I think a lot of people will have to navigate this just to continue to enjoy what they are getting out of that. And it is really kind of a useful tool and an interesting vantage, whatever and however people are using them. Even for fun. Is anyone else here? Am I alone? Did everyone walk out? I'm so sorry, YouTube. I feel really left. Does anyone else want to talk about something other than drones, or shall I drone?
The conversation is kind of droning on and on, but you can join the conversation by giving us a phone call, 802-321-4225. That's 802-321-HACK. Or you could, if you're in the United States, get us toll-free at 833-755-2600.
We have no callers.
Yeah, if we did, we'd be talking to them, not ourselves.
Well, as much as we love this YouTube chat, this is primarily a telephone call-in show that we have. So I think we would like to get some callers. So don't be shy. Give us a call. We want to hear your voice.
Yeah, this is what happens when you open up the chat. People chat to each other and forget about us.
And your comments don't have to be about remote ID or drones. They can be about anything. What you hacked, what you hacked for breakfast. I don't know.
Okay. Well, here's a story that I think might be a little interesting about something that was hacked. A Brazilian phone spyware application was hacked and victims' devices deleted from the server. This is considered a good thing because it's stalkerware. Now, it's called Web Detective without a C. Yeah, so imagine the word detective and take the C out. That's I don't know how to pronounce that. Web detective? I don't know what that means, but probably web detective was taken, so they got that one. It's been used to compromise more than 76,000 Android phones in recent years across South America, largely in Brazil. Web detective is also the latest phone spyware company in recent months to have been hacked. Now, TechCrunch reports this, an undated note that they saw. The unnamed hackers described how they found and exploited several security vulnerabilities that allow them to compromise WebDetective servers and access its user databases. By exploiting other flaws in the spyware maker's web dashboard used by abusers to access the stolen phone data of their victims, the hackers said they enumerated and downloaded every dashboard record, including every customer's email address. The hackers said that dashboard access also allowed them to delete victim devices from the spyware network altogether, effectively severing the connection at the server level to prevent the device from uploading new data, which we definitely did because we could. Yeah. Sounds like a good thing. Sounds like if you're going to hack something that's abusive and disable it. Although I'm sure there's somebody who would object to this. Probably governments following people that they suspect of doing something bad, and they use the stalkerware software as well, or something like that. But I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a socially responsible thing, and I love when the hacker spirit is turned to making things safer and nicer for everybody.
At the time of this hack, WebDetective had compromised 76,794 devices. The data also contains 74,336 unique customer email addresses. Though WebDetective doesn't verify a customer's email address when signing up, preventing any meaningful analysis of the spyware's customers. It's not known who did this, but somebody with good motive, supposedly. I believe we have a phone call. Is that right?
We do.
Okay, let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Cover Time. Go ahead.
Good evening, gang. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. This is Tim in Connecticut.
Hi, Tim in Connecticut.
Let's see. Yeah, I was calling originally to respond to the drones, but if we've switched over to the hacker thing, well, throw quotations, of course, around that. Just recently I heard of the FBI takes down notorious Quackbot hacking network.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that story. Do you want to tell people about that?
Oh, I'd have to pull it up in an article, but sure. Well, I mean, you know, not being in the group, theoretically, FBI takes down notorious Quackbot hacking network that used 700,000 infected computers worldwide to steal hundreds of millions from unsuspecting targets in ransomware and financial fraud attacks. And it goes on to basically say that, you know, most of these are because somebody replied to a link or an inappropriate URL that popped up in an email thing, and that's how they got into the company's network.
Yeah.
The usual, you know, you can have a whole bunch of security, and somebody's going to either lose the keys or, you know, leave the door unlocked, or there's always the human element that's going to allow anybody to get a foothold in your system.
Sure. Yeah. And in this case, I think what they did is they stopped it communicating with the network itself from the controller side. They basically hacked that and were able to basically just disrupt or totally cut off communications with affected machines, essentially disabling it in the same way this other detective software.
I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, they said after gaining access, hacker gangs would then extort their victims seeking ransom payments in Bitcoin or other crypto before returning access to the encrypted computer network. Technically, some were not. Some were just simply take the money and run.
Right.
And also, apparently, the FBI did get to reverse in the millions of crypto coins payments that were stolen before shutting down the network.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a nice technique, right? I mean, pretty smooth. And it's like...
Well, you would have to have a sandboxed system,
right,
that you could respond with and play with so you don't allow your system to perpetuate the problem.
Right.
Right.
I would think it would be very hard to make sure that your machine at work is the only machine that's communicating with the hackers, or the fact that you'd have to know that you're compromised without alerting the people doing the compromising.
Oh, sure. Basically incubating an infected system and then sort of having enough information to access the control infrastructure. So, like, that would take a lot of other techniques, maybe some monitoring, maybe somebody talks, maybe somebody got paid. I don't know. You know, that's kind of their technique. But it would be important in getting to the point where you can actually be effective. I unfortunately think the whole thing is a little bit like table scraps. This is good work, but it's like, I mean, I don't want to be too thankful.
The only way you can really make a big headway and do some damage is you've got to find out who has been infected. So not only are you securing your own and cutting your own off and then killing the source, but everybody who's affected, you have to, I don't know, clean or disable them so they don't propagate once everything gets, you know, rebooted. I'm sure they have backups.
So in other words, you're saying that the network may have been, the control may have been shut down, but it may be something that is still spread because it's not functionally disabling what code or vulnerability is still out there. Okay.
Replicating itself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, true.
I mean, if it's out there and it's still replicating and your source is down, somebody within that group, it was a few people, would have backups. And I'm sure if it's, you know, their cash cow, they would certainly want to bring up another system, maybe in a different place. Or
you're talking controller side. Items. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That is, I think, a part of it too. Yeah, like, but it would be something that I think people this deep in investigating it would probably be well attuned to. But you don't know, they don't know who exactly they're dealing with. Just because they disrupt a machine doesn't mean they've actually affected the human side of that. Unless that's part of the announcement. I don't know much more about the story. Like, if they've implicated.
Well,
anything, I mean,
yeah,
other than what
the operation involved authorities from France, Germany, Netherlands, the United Kingdom, Romania, and Latvia.
Sounds like a fun bunch.
cool. Was Croatia in there?
No, that's the only one that they had here.
Alex, check in on that.
Are you okay, Alex? Oh, he's there. There he is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm here. Listening intently.
Rob, you had something to add?
I'll tell you.
Yeah, I...
Oh, hang on.
Sorry, go ahead,
Alex. I know you had more to say, Alex. Go ahead.
Oh, I do. I want to say I think these coordinated takedowns are really interesting in how they combine an understanding of the technical infrastructure of the threat actor together with the use of legal process. And that's something that that my firm has actually been doing for Microsoft for some time, in that we also have an active case right now in the Eastern District of New York, whereby we have dismantled a lot of the back-end infrastructure for domains that have been hosting cracked versions of Cobalt Strike. Cobalt Strike, for people that are listening and don't know what it is, I imagine many of our listeners probably do. Cobalt Strike is penetration testing software that's really effective at simulating the types of tools that threat actors would use. And because of that, Cobalt Strike is very often used to compromise organizations and is also very often a precursor to ransomware events. So by using the same type of investigative techniques together with legal process, we were able to dismantle these huge networks of threat actors utilizing cracked Cobalt Strike infrastructure and thereby actually make a dent in the amount of ransomware instances that have been popping up over the last, let's say, 7-8 months. So we're doing similar stuff to what law enforcement is doing, but on the civil side.
Interesting. Rob, you had something?
Yeah, I wanted to relate the information given further down in this TechCrunch article, which is how easy it is to detect the web detective app if it's installed on your Android phone. The app apparently appears on your desktop, on your phone's desktop, or on your apps list as Wi-Fi. It's named Wi-Fi, and the icon is just a blue and white Wi-Fi symbol. But if you long press on it and get the app info, it gives the name Sistema, which is system in Portuguese. And that is this app, this piece of stalkerware poorly disguising itself as a system app. And if you have, if you find you have this or you suspect that there's other stalkerware on your phone, I just wanted to give a shout out to the site stopstalkerware.org, which has a lot of resources and guides on how to check your phone for spyware, what to do if you find it, how to get rid of it, and everything else. And it's very user-friendly, and you don't have to be technical to benefit from the info on there. So that's stopstalkerware.org.
Anything else, caller?
No, not at all. I just don't foresee myself putting any ID on my drone just simply because of the age. And I think a lot that took the things that happened that made me lose interest in flying out my DJI Phantom drone is simply that they've reduced the areas that you can do so legitimately, legally, state parks. I mean, you know, some are fine, like I can't fly within 5 miles of an airport. That sort of makes sense. But, you know, you just can't take it anywhere and just put it up and fly around and use your camera to look at things. I just thought it was a very good thing for photography purposes.
Yeah, I mean, there's, so much of the country's got wildfire and you can't fly around that, obviously. Like, there's pretty strict rules around emergencies and disasters, although they've been using them commercially. And I think that's kind of the point I was making, too. It's just this huge emphasis on commercial use. But even small entrepreneurs are...
My 107 license, you know, I just didn't see the need to put the money into that. And because I'm not going to be a commercial pilot, I'm not going to
and they were offering
surveys and things like that.
Correct. Different levels of training, and they've changed it a little bit, and been overall, like, I think, pretty upfront about what you have to do to set up and to be aware of where exactly you're operating, and they very much treat you like you're a pilot, sort of, which, I mean, of course, what do you expect from the FAA, but it's definitely, like, they're clamping down, it's definitely, it's less desirable, and it just seems like it is not the free-for-all, as I mentioned, and Rob was alluding to, where you can, I think, just go and feel free to enjoy these things with no kind of bound. And there have been accidents. There's good reason for all of this, and they do want to actually mature that sort of concept of, like, getting a pizza with a drone or whatever, you know, the ideal is with all of this. But they're just sort of, I think, mostly anticipating a lot more of them in the future and how to get some kind of strictures around their use and just overall presence and prevalence. So it's very interesting, but I share where you're coming from fully. You know, it's going to be it's a little weird.
Well, I would think that if I wanted to get back into the hobby, I would just have to buy a new device if I wanted to be fully legal, because the amount of money that I would have to take and spend on an old unit, since they've come down in price so much, it's probably just easier to pick up something new that has all the information in it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like more and more I have mixed feelings about so many things. Like, I think that's true, but I think there's also this, like, life cycle. Like, they are sort of expensive, but not at the same time. And, I mean, if you want something that's all-in-one, and I mean, you can go into this. I mean, it's a whole market and so forth. And it is, I think, an appreciable cost for most people. So you have to kind of, you know, weigh that and the total expense of it. And, of course, you want to avoid accidents and not be, like, a risk to the public. But, like you said, just taking a picture, all of a sudden someone complains. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, the hard part is to stay within line of sight of everything.
Well, that too.
Unless you're in a big, flat field.
Yeah, and I just think that, like, okay, the new drones that people can, that have the flight time and that people, you know, people that have money can go and buy that and run their autonomous, you know, run their maps and do all that stuff unattended. And I just don't know that, like, you're really growing something that's emerging in a very fair way if, you know, those are the actors that are free to do that kind of thing. But, I mean, again, this is all, like, discussed, so there's probably some safety reason. So the older ones with these beacons will, yes, have to be line of sight. So it's sort of building in this thing of, like, well, you got to spend on the beacon, and then you got to, you know, plan your sort of use. And if you're a photographer or you just are just learning and so forth, all of a sudden diving into thousands or, you know, even more money, it might turn people off that would otherwise have a lot of fun with it or, you know, be into,
right,
get turned onto it or be more interested after getting a chance to try it out. And I'm worrying that there's going to be so much emphasis on the commercial that it's going to alienate a lot of people that are really new to it and don't have that much practice, so to speak.
Hey, Kyle, you said you might reveal the name of the drone that the company stopped showing any support for to shame them into.
No, I don't want to shame them.
Why not?
I don't. It's so.
It doesn't have a set of initials, does it?
No. It's not one of those. We've got a parrot. So we've got one of the early models of that, not the the AR, A.R. One, a couple after that. One of the Bebop.
Yeah, I had a parrot once.
Yeah, but
you can't even get a battery for it, right? It's so.
I couldn't find out anything about the thing until I found an old talk about how vulnerable they were to being hacked. And it was really interesting. It talked about it running a variant of, I believe, Linux or Unix, and how the sort of camera sensors oriented, just all the details for actually playing with it. And I just think in the context of other conversations we have, not just getting away from privacy for a moment, but like right to repair and like keeping stuff from just being junk or truly, you know, sunk cost, there ought to be like at least information if the company is going to move on and declare that life cycle over. That's fine, but like, I found it sort of fitting that the hacker angle was the only place that I could get information about this sort of forgotten model that I wanted to play with, and never really felt like I got that much out of it. No sooner do you, like, register it and do all this stuff. I felt contained then, like, kind of, like, wow, this is a lot. I haven't even really gotten started, and now they're doubling down with more of that. And, yeah, the manufacturer is making all kinds of defense and other kinds of commercial stuff, and you can't find anything about this model at all on their site. And they were the same kind of apathetic around battery replacement, so I've made my own adapter and matched the batteries and done a lot of other customizing. I have my own strobe made out of a ping pong ball. I'm ready.
Wow.
All right. I hear you. Now you just, you know, got to stay under a certain ceiling. Can't be by an airport or a helipad or
a
state park.
I wanted to try it out. I wanted to have fun, and, you know.
And, you know, you'll have people that'll be like, well, that's a lithium battery that's flying around. What if it crashes and starts a fire?
Well, right. I mean, I learned about that, sizing and trying to, like, come up with a solution for, like, what are drone people doing as far as power supplies? Like, where's that at? And I had to figure out connectors I'd never seen before and all of that and solder and, you know, get really into all of that. And just like deciding where you're going to operate the thing, you know, you're now going to be like considering the privacy thing just on top of all the planning you have to do just to try it out. And I don't know.
I don't know if it's worth it anymore.
Yeah, that's what it always comes down to.
Lots of, you know, what's the, trying to remember the very, very small ones, the Whirly Hoops or whatever they're
doing. Oh, yeah, I've looked at those. And yeah.
Those are great to train with.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, amount of time, really, in the air. It's just that a gust of wind would, you know, make it go away forever.
Yeah, yeah. I read some reviews about those being good to learn on. I'm also curious about, like, some of the fancy controllers. Like, can I get one of those to add this older drone? Because a lot of those store different profiles. You can, like, keep multiple drones. But I don't know if it will associate with one that is, for all intents and purposes, proprietary.
The synchronization.
Exactly.
Method, learning protocols, what language they talk.
Yeah. So anyway, we're gonna move on. I'll get some more thoughts on this and keep updating on the perils of flying a drone.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more to come in this saga.
Okay, I'll let you guys go and get on to the next caller.
All right. Thanks for your call. Take care.
Righto. Bye bye.
So Alex, I know you said you had to run, but I'd like you to describe some of Croatia for us first before you do, and what your travel plans are next.
Yeah, sure. I'll be here for a couple more days, and then heading back to Italy for a few days with some colleagues and friends, and then back to New York. So. Also, by the way, one interesting thing about Croatia is, you know, we can play a little bit of trivia here. Does anybody, without Googling it, or know what the CCPLD is for the country of Croatia?
.hr.
You're right. Okay. Yep, you got it. Yep. Very good.
Remember
very
who
good
you're now. Talking to, Alex.
Got any more brain busters?
Yep. All right, but why is it .hr?
That's how you say Croatia in Croatian.
Herzegovina.
Yes, Hrvatska, right? This is how you say Croatian.
Oh.
Which, yes, H, the how you spell Croatia in Croatian is Hrvatska. Right? Where I believe the V is pronounced almost like the Latin V as a W. And the name comes from, I think, the late medieval Latin for Croatia, Hrvatska.
I don't understand why we don't say the names of countries the way they say the name of their country. Why do we have to rename it?
Yeah, I know. It's tricky, isn't it? I couldn't answer that one, but man, it's just too late for me.
I mean, you know, France is a bad example. But Italy, you know, how do you say Italy in Italian?
Italia.
Yeah, how hard would that be? Come on, I can say Italia.
Yeah.
And Roma. Yeah, instead of Rome, it's Roma. Right?
Yes, that's right, Roma.
I know a lot of it already.
Yeah. Napoli instead of Naples, Milano instead of Milan.
Moscow is Moskva, you know, there's so many. And I don't know, it just would make things a lot easier to understand people.
Russia instead of Russia, sure. It's a good point. But to go back to your other question, I think Croatia is just an extraordinary place. It's some place I wanted to visit for a while, and it has this, you know, really majestic beauty in terms of having these scattered islands, wonderful parks, national parks, kind of littered all around the landscape. I don't know, Emmanuel, when you were in Croatia, if you went to the Plitvice by any chance?
I don't believe so.
Plitvice National Park?
No.
That was a little couple hours away from where I am now, more in the mainland of Croatia, but also way up in the mountains. And there's this series of lakes and massive waterfalls that are fed by glacial waters, actually on the UNESCO Heritage Site. And we spent the day walking around all of these waterfalls and essentially these glacial lakes that are just beautiful blue and clearest water that you could absolutely imagine. It was just extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it. But you know, it's a Slavic place, and people are different. You know, it's very close to Italy, but the food and the culture and the history is completely different, I think, from a lot of what we would ordinarily consider to be Western European countries. And because of the Slavic culture here, I think people are not necessarily as open or as warm as you would expect in kind of other bits of Europe. But it's, you know, it's different. It's a different culture. I think the Slavic people, they may be tough nuts to crack in the sense of they're not always outwardly very friendly or helpful. But once you get past that shell, they are, you know, extraordinarily warm and friendly people. And I think they are, will be loyal friends for life. And that's, so it's been a very, very interesting experience here.
Well, I've heard the same thing said about New Yorkers. So, and
true.
You know, I don't think I found friendlier people than when I was in Croatia and Serbia. And in fact, that whole region, Bosnia and Macedonia, or however you're supposed to say it now, North Macedonia. Yeah, it's fascinating to simply go from one place to another and see all the differences. It's really a fascinating part of the world with so much history, so much history.
Yeah, and the food is extraordinary here too. I mean, the meats, the stews, the, you know, the one thing that I've been trying to do is, you know, eat out most nights that we're here, and it's really just to try to order the local stuff off of the menu, you know, not go to the touristy places, eat the local foods, drink the local beers, and I feel like I have just not been able to go wrong ordering any of the local stews. They're really kind of extraordinary what they're able to do here in terms of their cuisine, and I've been really impressed by it. This is a great place. I'm going to definitely be back here, I hope, many times in the future.
Cool. And what time is it there now?
It is 2:42 a.m. So with that, I'm going to take my leave and let you guys finish up the rest of Overtime.
Okay.
But it's been an absolute pleasure, and I'll see everybody next week.
All right. Have a good time there.
All right, I will. Talk to everybody soon. Have a good one.
Take care.
Good night, Alex.
Now, phone number 802-321-4225. Is there anyone else out there who wishes to say something on the air, as it were? Gayla, go ahead.
We have a quick question from YouTube participant Checkers Lane, who says, this is just a quick one for you, Emmanuel. I see these many WUSB radio videos posted on Off the Hook YouTube channel. What radio station was that?
You just said what radio station that was.
I know that.
Well, then you know the answer. I mean, I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but you just asked me what you mentioned WUSB videos and asked what radio station. WUSB is a radio station. I mean, is this a trick question?
Checkers Lane, does that answer your question? Please reply in the chat. Also, YouTube participant Dory points out something very interesting that has happened in Michigan this week. In response to a cyber attack, the University of Michigan took their entire network for other campuses offline, which would not have been a problem had the fall semester not started on Monday. So they've been running the first week of the semester functionally offline.
Good for them. Good for them. Give that a try, you know. Cut yourself off from the net every now and then. And see if you've got anything of value. And odds are you'll discover that you do.
It's interesting. They've had to waive some fees. Things are not getting – things that are normally now taken care of on the internet obviously are not happening. People are not being charged to withdraw or register late at this point. Some things have gone back online. Others are taking more time. But it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Story to watch go by. So thank you, Dory, for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah, you know, you could still be connected on campus without being connected to the outside net. You could still have, you know, your own local network.
Right, the campus internet. The campus, what's the word I'm looking for?
Intranet.
Thank you. The intranet has also gone down.
Yeah, their FTP server.
Yeah, just everything is the freshmen are having a hard time. Let's put it that way.
It's
finally, eternal September ends.
Yeah, college is supposed to be challenging, so here's your first challenge. All right, you have a phone call?
We do.
All right, let's see who's out there. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Johnny Fusion.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. My last clinic appointment, they said I was the healthiest and strongest they ever saw me.
Cool.
And my transplanted lungs are now in the normal range for lung capacity.
Wow.
For the first time.
Okay, that's something awesome to be happy about.
Yeah. So I wanted to kind of tell, maybe write for the magazine, an old story about basically my first online intrusion.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, so Johnny was a young teenage hacker looking for guidance, found a Hacker BBS. And someone said, sure, I'll teach you. First, war dial this exchange, right? And I'm like, okay. And funnily enough, I never heard from them again, but I found some interesting stuff. And I found this one system didn't quite work with my terminal program. There was, like, weird noise and stuff. But it was just a login prompt and nothing else. And, you know, I'm trying all the usual things like help login, admin, sysop, because, I mean, this was like the early 90s, so those were still account names you might get on dial-up. And one time I had a friend over that was, you know, one of the computer nerds from my high school, and I told him, look at this weird system I found. He goes, wait a minute. And I see him and he types in his name and then he types in a password and he gets in and he disconnects right away and he says, lose this number. This is a government system that I work on. You really don't want to be messing with this. So, of course, I had to hack it then.
Oh, boy.
Right? But now I knew that logins were first names. So, like, I'm just trying to think of names. And every once in a while I get a name, I get a password prompt, and I write it down. Okay, that's an account with this system. And it gets to the point where I'm just using names from television shows that I watched as a kid. You know, I go through the Brady Bunch. Greg, Marcia, Jan, Cindy, Bobby, Peter.
Wow. Don't forget right? Alice. Don't forget Alice. She's important.
And Alice, yeah. And then I get to Leave It to Beaver. I'm like, Ted, Theodore, Wally, Wallace, Eddie, June, Ward. And when I type Ward, I don't get a password prompt. I get access. There was an account named Ward that didn't have a password.
And you just happened to type that?
Yeah. Just persistence and dumb luck, because I knew logins were first names. I was just trying to map what the account names were. So I have this system completely open, and the first thing I do is I download and print out a user list. And I find all the other accounts without passwords. So if Ward ever goes away, I have all these backups. And I completely own this system. I didn't do any vandalism. You know, there was like appointment calendars and mail that I could read and stuff like that. But that's just how it was done, like, in 1991, 92, dialing random numbers and systematically finding modems and seeing what was on the other side.
Wow. yes, Rob, go ahead.
Without going into more information than you're comfortable with, did you ever find out exactly what this system was?
Yes, I did. I'm not going to say what it was, but it was a little state agency that gives resources to families and kids that have developmental disabilities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Johnny Fusion, I just wanted to let you know that the chat is everybody is thrilled for you and just sending you their very best wishes. Everyone is thrilled to hear your news, and I just wanted to pass that along to you.
Oh, thank you, chat. I'm not looking at the chat right now because I want to pay attention to the call.
Right, I pay attention to the chat. That's, you know, how everybody, yeah, everybody's got something to do here. But yes, everybody's thrilled for you, and I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long journey. When I first started calling in the show, I wasn't doing too hot. You know, I was institutionalized and, you know, in medical care. And now I'm living my best life, probably going to the 2600 meeting this Friday, because it's this Friday, right?
Yes, it is. And which meeting is that?
San Francisco.
Okay, let us know how that is.
I went last month, and only three of us showed up, and we were all there for the first time. So
that can happen, but that is a meeting, you know? Two people is a meeting. They don't always occur when you expect them to, but they occur more times than not.
Yeah, one guy was a regular at the Austin 2600 meeting, and he said attendance since the pandemic, since the restart, has been really low, and sometimes it's only three people.
Yeah. And I know there are a lot more meetings that are happening that we don't know about because for some reason they have meetings and they don't tell us. and we can't list them if we don't know about them. But they assume we do, yeah. I think.
Yeah, the funny thing is, many years later, when I was married and I hung up my black hat, because there was a specific event that made me hang up my black hat, and that's when my partner said, I'm pregnant. I'm like, okay, now the risk is too high to be doing this kind of hacking. And eventually, we got services from that same state organization for our kids.
Wow. So
And I was just curious. I wonder if it still works. So I put on my black hat just for a little bit, and I dialed into the number. It still had a modem there. Ward's account still didn't have a password. And I could see our workers' calendar. And I thought, hey, if we ever want to be seen, I could just make our own appointments.
Oh, my God. I can't believe there's a system out there that doesn't have a password on an account. I didn't know that was even possible still.
Well, if you remember, like, Clifford Stoll doesn't like passwords. He recommends, not Clifford Stoll, who's the free software guy?
Richard Stallman. Yeah, they're not replacing it with nothing. They're replacing it with some other form of confirmation.
Yeah, I remember, like, there was a time, maybe 20, 30 years ago, where he was anti-password. Just have your account open because it was all about being free and open.
Right, yeah, and I know the machine that he ran had no password on it, and of course all kinds of crazy things happened as a result, but I understand and respect that position, but for, you know, a state agency, yeah, you got to have passwords.
Yeah, well, it was the wild, woolly time. I mean, home internet was still dial-up. Well, actually, when I first breached it, home internet wasn't a thing yet. It was still a year or two away. Mm-hmm. And then even then, home internet was very different. It was, you got a shell account, and you have a Unix shell, and you run Unix programs to get on IRC, to read Usenet, to do your mail.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got my start with getting really savvy with Unix-like operating systems. And I eventually, when I was in Amsterdam, the Hacktic guys, who were then X's for all because the Netherlands finally got around to making hacking illegal, they set me up. They said, do you know Unix? I'm like, well, yeah, a bit. I'm like, okay, we got, you can have this sysadmin job that one of our people wants to quit. And they hooked me up with a job doing sysadmin. They gave me a manual. They said, here's the manual. And they said, it's a very hacker thing to get a job that you barely know how to do and learn as you go. And that was my first sysadmin job.
Interesting.
Of many.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, sounds like you've had a good week, a good couple of weeks, and we hope things continue to go well.
Thanks. I just wanted to share some stories from the olden days.
Yeah, well, that definitely was a good one. Wonder who Ward is or was.
You think that would work in article form, like a tale from the old hat?
Well, yeah, but a different tale because you already told this one, unless there's new details that you want to add.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure there are many stories, though. Just capturing the whole mood of the of that time is a valuable thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I was a baby hacker, you know? It's just like, and it was wild then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Things were a lot different. Like, we didn't have this connected world we have today where computers and access was few and far between.
Very true. All right, look, good hearing from you, and we're going to probably head out now, right?
Okay, thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Wow. So.
Yes, indeed.
Rob, go ahead.
Before we do head out for the night, Kyle, I want to go back to something you said earlier.
What did I say?
What did you say, Kyle?
When you were talking about the drone you've got, the dead drone, you mentioned it's a parrot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're saying you have a dead parrot?
I do.
Here we go.
The rest of life, it rests in peace. It's pushing up the daisies. It's off the twig. It's kicked the bucket. Shuffled off this mortal coil.
Yeah, it's a dead parrot.
Yeah, and he's married to me and no one else.
It's not talking much.
And all we just want it replaced. That's all.
Wait, what? Replaced?
Well, you know, it's a dead parrot. It's
alive when we came in here, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, they'll replace it with some like sentient AI thing that is really not just for, you know, taking fun pictures and learning how to fly. So, back to the drawing board.
If you want anything done in this country, you have to do it yourself. All right. With that, I think we're done. OTH. You all right there, Gila?
Yeah, it's going to take me a second.
Literally
yeah.
Rolling on the floor. Oh, we have another phone call. Should we take that one phone call? Let's make it a quick phone call because we only took two. All right. Good evening. You are the last phone call and hopefully a quick phone call.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to pass along a guest suggestion. Jonathan Taplin. He has a new book coming out. It's called The End of Reality, How 4 Billionaires Are Selling a Fantasy Future of the Metaverse, Mars, and Crypto.
Uh-huh.
And he focuses on Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Mark Andreessen, and Peter Thiel. And I read some advanced reviews, and it's getting very favorable coverage. And I thought that might be something of interest to you guys.
Okay, well, we'll keep that in mind for sure.
Yeah, thanks for that. We're always interested in learning about how the super class is not so super.
Right. And one other thing. I noticed the volume on the callers that called in before me.
Uh-huh.
The audio was terrible. I could barely hear them. I mean, I hear you guys. Your volume isn't great, but it's coming in. But the callers, it sounded almost as if they were whispering on
really?
The phone.
Really? Okay, we'll look into that, because yeah. It sounded fine on this end. How did it sound to you guys, Rob, Gila?
We heard it fine, yeah.
All right, we'll look into that, see if that's something that's on the archive.
Something may have come loose.
Yeah. Well, we'll check.
Yeah. All right, thanks. All right, have a great night.
You too. Take care. And with that, we are done for the night.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Again, we'll be back next week for another show on WBAI. Again, the BAI Buddy Week. They expect us to get at least 10 BAI buddies. So please spread the word. We could be in a lot of trouble. Yeah, and we'll be giving out all the details then. Write to us, OTH@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Good night.
See ya.